welcome to this week's edition of the Video News InScreen Media Podcast. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon from InScreen Media is with me. Hi, Colin.
Hi, Will. I am really looking forward to the Ad Summit next week in New York.
Yes, thank you. I am too. We have a great lineup, 11 sessions, over 40 speakers. This is our 8th annual Video News Online Video Advertising Summit. We've got a great crowd registered so far, and you are going to be moderating a terrific session that's called Connected TV's Ad-Supported Future, which is all about how people are migrating their viewership of content in connected TV devices from ad-free subscription services to ad-supported services. And that's creating a whole new opportunity. And that's actually a pretty good segue into what we're going to talk about on today's podcast, right?
You bet. And that's going to be an awesome session, Will. We've got Pluto TV, we've got Hulu, Beachfront Media, Roku. I mean, these are the companies that are really at the forefront. But we don't have anybody from Apple, which I guess is no surprise to you and me, because Apple generally doesn't participate in these sorts of things. However, there was a very interesting announcement from Apple at their Worldwide Developers Conference in San Jose on Tuesday. And what they announced was that Charter Communications will allow their Spectrum TV subscribers to substitute an Apple TV for the Spectrum TV set-top box. So this is, I think, the first time that a major pay television operator has opted to jump on board with Apple TV and actually allow their customers to use it instead of their set-top box. Now, it's not the first time an operator has done this. For example, if you're a Comcast Xfinity X1 customer, you can use a Roku set-top box instead of the X1 set-top to manage your pay television experience. So certainly not the first time this has been done, but it is the first time that anybody's really made this decision to go with Apple. Now, you're going to need the most recent Apple TV, the Apple TV 4K, to do this, which is not cheap. It's $170. But you'll apparently this is going to launch later this year. So I'm not quite sure exactly what the date is, but they did say later this year. And the great thing about this integration for you, if you're a Spectrum subscriber, is that you're not going to have to sign in if you also have broadband from Spectrum. So Apple's introducing this thing called Zero Sign In, and it uses the latest tvOS, which is I think version 12, which is what the Spectrum TV app will run on. And with this, it basically, the Apple box figures out if you are connected to the Spectrum broadband network, then it automatically detects that, and from then on, you don't have to sign in to actually use the Spectrum TV app. And you should be able to access all of the channels that you can access through the set-top box. And it goes one step further than that, because any TV Everywhere app, like from HBO Go or Watch Home and Garden TV, you also won't have to sign in for those either. So this is pretty nice. It makes it really, really smooth. No, you don't have to remember any passwords. And it takes it sort of one step further from where the technology was before. And the reason I mention that is that Roku actually has a single sign-in, not a zero sign-in. Basically, with Roku, you sign in once. So let's say you run the Xfinity TV app, and you sign into that app, you do that once, and then you really don't have to do it again for that app or for the TV Everywhere apps either. So this I think is a really big deal for Apple. Not such a big deal for Charter, but it's a really big deal for Apple, because Apple has been promising to reinvent the TV experience forever. I think it was back in 2011 that Steve Jobs said, "I've cracked it," meaning he'd cracked the TV experience. And even as recently as 2014, Apple was rumored to have been in discussions with Time Warner Cable about using Time Warner using an Apple TV as its set-top box. And of course, Time Warner Cable was ultimately purchased by Charter. So maybe that's where these conversations came from. But the thing for I think that's really exciting for Apple is that the Apple TV box really is lagging the other major providers. So looking at the latest data from Parks, Roku is way out ahead with 37% streaming media player share. Second is Amazon Fire TVs, Fire TV devices. And Apple comes in third at 16%, only a little bit ahead of Google with Chromecast. So this could give a big boost to sales among Charter Spectrum subscribers. So I think that's one thing. But I don't know about you, but I'm really intrigued to see how this all works out on the box because, you know, this is their big shot at reinventing the TV experience. So is this going to get you, if you were a Charter subscriber, would you run out and buy an Apple TV to do this, Will?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I certainly agree with you that I think for Apple, it's meaningful for the reasons that you've mentioned. I mean, Apple has really, I think, fallen way short of its potential, the potential role it could have played in TV. And we've seen others like Google and Amazon and Roku really, I think, leapfrog them. And certainly the lower cost point, price points of these devices has left Apple in sort of a niche position. So I like this. I mean, again, Tim Cook, 2015, the future of TV is apps. It's now 2018. I think we've seen a lot of movement on that front. And the Charter move, to me, in a way, I think sort of mimics what we've been seeing the skinny bundles, the virtual MVPDs doing by enabling their services fully as apps. So, you know, obviously you can watch linear, you can watch on demand, you can watch DVR, all within the apps from the various skinny bundles. And I know you've been doing this with Hulu TV and YouTube TV. I've been doing it with YouTube TV. It's a really nice experience, and it really does sort of bolster the idea that being able to get everything from your let's call it your pay TV provider, whether that's skinny bundle or multi-channel, through a single app is a very powerful value proposition. It also, I think, simplifies things for the user to not have to have another set-top box. It also certainly reduces the cost to the user to not have to rent another set-top box for whatever it might be, $10, $20 a month. You get access to all your DVR recordings from the cloud, so on any device, anywhere you happen to be, et cetera. So I think that the appification of TV is a very powerful trend. And Apple, which of course 3 years ago was on the forefront of saying that that was going to be a trend, seems 3 years later to finally be catching up with its own hype.
I think you're right there, but you know, I actually felt when Tim Cook said this about the appification that it was already something that I think most people in the industry was aware of. Certainly, Reed Hastings had been talking about it for at least 2 years before that. I know I've been talking about the appification for it seems like forever. So I think this trend is very, very clearly happening now. The funny thing is, Will, this puts the pay TV operator in a pretty interesting position, doesn't it? Because when you think about it, as soon as they put their app on a box like Apple TV, it sits side by side and is a peer to other apps that might be on that box. So for example, if YouTube TV sat there, it's really just a peer to another service like that that provides very, very similar features and functionality and content. And you got to say, will the $100 price per month for pay television hold up when I can get YouTube TV for $40 on the same device Is this just going to accelerate cord cutting? You've got to wonder if that's the case, right?
Yeah, and again, cord cutting, a little bit of a misnomer here, because even if you subscribe to a YouTube TV or, you know, TV, you're still taking a pay TV, a skinnier version of that. And my sense is that, you know, as this amplification process happens, and by the way, I think if you fast forward 2 years, I think that all of the major pay TV operators will have amplified their multi-channel services, and they'll be available. All the services will be available across all the different major connected TV devices. So today it's, you know, Roku and Xfinity, but now we've seen Apple TV and Spectrum. I think flash forward 2 years and it's all major operators and all major connected TV platforms. So that's the world we're going to. But I think people will hang on to that full boat multi-channel lineup if their family demands it, right? If there are four or five people in a home and everyone has their favorite seven or eight channels, and that adds up to, you know, whatever, 30, 40, 50 channels that are must-haves in a household, then having the full boat will make sense. Conversely, if you're in a one-person or two-person household, maybe lighter TV viewers, more of your TV viewing has migrated to, you know, the SVOD services, then, as you say, a $40 a month service will probably be just fine. And considering that's all going to be available via these apps, it's not really going to make much of a difference. And I have to say, I mean, I think the set-top box has always been, it's been kind of a curse for the user, because they've had to pay extra for it. A lot of times the technology is totally outmoded. They have to set up times for installations and deactivations and going to stores to drop off boxes. There's a lot of friction with the set-top box. So I think amplifying and using these inexpensive, widely available connected TV devices, I think is a huge step forward for the consumer. But it is, to your point, I think a brave new world for the traditional pay TV operator that has always really used that model of being able to rent a set-top box and then bolting their service to it. It's that world is, I think, quickly coming undone. And the Apple Charter announcement this week is just another sort of in that trajectory.
Yeah, I agree. And it's funny, Will, I talked to operators, quite a few operators, about 2 years ago when I did a white paper on the future of the set-top box, the pay TV set-top box, called Owning Input One. That white paper is available free at my website, of course. And, you know, one of the things that came home to me was there were two groups. There was a group of operators who said that they would never put their content side by side on an open box like that. And then there was another group that said, well, yeah, we absolutely would. And it seems to me like the ones that said they absolutely would are winning. The ones that are trying to completely control the experience, well, they're not doing so well these days. it definitely seemed to be heading in that direction.
I mean, don't you think it's just logical that as more people adopt the virtual MVPDs, the skinny bundles that are all appified, and start telling their friends and neighbors about the pure convenience factor, never mind the price, the lower price, that's a whole nother thing, the sheer convenience factor of being able to get their full lineup cloud-based anywhere they want, any device they want, et cetera, that's going to, I think, become something very interesting and very popular, and that operators that don't amplify are really, I think, going to look archaic at some point pretty soon.
I think they are. Although I have to say, you know, both the Spectrum and the Xfinity interfaces are pretty good these days, Will. And they are trying to aggregate the content just exactly in the same way that the streaming media player providers are trying to do. So there's some very interesting tensions going on here. So, but you know, I think there was, it's not just Apple who's trying to reinvent the TV experience, right? We saw an announcement this morning, we're recording here on Thursday morning. We saw an announcement today from Amazon as well, right?
Yeah, so interesting, as we're sort of tooting the horn of appification, Apple here on Thursday announced this new device they're calling the Fire TV Cube, which is kind of a mashup of an Echo device with a Fire TV. That functionality has already been in the market in a product called Fire TV with Alexa. So that's not the new piece here. The new piece here is the Fire TV Cube has a higher aspiration to be your entertainment hub, controlling compatible TVs, soundbars, AV receivers, and in the big news, cable and satellite set-top boxes. So just before we bury cable and satellite boxes, here comes Amazon kind of partially riding to the rescue. They're, I think, recognizing that we still live in a world where there are 90 million, et cetera, homes that do have these set-top boxes, that inertia is a strong force, and that if they want to play this kind of all-encompassing role in the living room, that they need to play nicely with the existing boxes. And so they've come up with this solution of using IR blasters to control a relatively narrow set of functions on the set-top box. So we're talking about turning the boxes on and off, changing channels, et cetera, not doing things like controlling DVR or VOD. So it's not like the set-top box remote control would go away entirely if you installed a Fire TV Cube, but it is a recognition by Amazon that they want to try to get a foothold in households where they're not ready to cut the cord or be a cord never. So that's the new entry, and sort of remains to be seen. Neither you nor I have gone hands-on with the Fire TV Cube. Both of us have had sort of up and down experiences with IR blasters in the past, so we're sort of a little bit cautious about just how well this is going to work with existing set-tops. But it does represent a bid to kind of keep the established world intact with these set-top boxes out there. So it's going to be pretty interesting to see whether this device is able to gain a foothold or whether it ends up being more of a niche type of thing. What's your take?
So we've seen this before, right? As you say, we've seen the IR blaster before, and in fact, I remember the Logitech Review, which was powered by an early incarnation of Google's attempt on television. I think it was called Google TV at that time, as opposed to Android TV. That box was a kind of a pricey box that used IR blasters to sort of unify everything together. They were also using HDMI pass-through technology to allow them to put overlays on the screen and do some other stuff. And I got to tell you, Will, it was a big failure. A really big failure. I mean, they sold virtually none of these darn things. They were trying to give them away, but I think basically at the end. So I think, running those cables, this is a fiddly business to get IR blasters working. And I got a feeling, I got to believe that it's probably not going to be a big winner for Amazon. It's great that they're trying it. But I got to tell you, I'm also quite surprised, Will, that they went this route because we have seen some operators already integrate with Alexa. So, for example, if you're a Dish customer and you have a recent version of their Hopper DVR, you can actually use Alexa. There is a skill that you can load with Alexa, which allows you to control that experience. And I think it's actually a little bit better than the basic functionality. I think you can set recordings and playback and change channel and do all sorts of things. But that, of course, requires that you have the bring an Alexa in close to the TV. So I was actually quite surprised that they went the IR blaster route. I thought they might be able to twist the arms of some of the providers there and get them to support it directly in that way. But unfortunately, that only works if the DV if it's a DVR that is a connected device. It doesn't work if you have a fairly basic SDB. So the only way you can do that is with IR blasters. But the problem is that we really don't seem to like to mess with that stuff. So I don't know. I'm not very hopeful for this, Will. It is an interesting approach to integrating the TV the TV functionality, which I applaud them for trying. But I have to say that of the two approaches, I think the Apple TV Roku approach, where you actually have a real app that's running on the device, is definitely the way to go for a better integrated feel and for, you know, more functionality. So there's a lot to be said by only having one box under the TV. So that's a big selling point, I think. But
And certainly the Apple Spectrum approach is more forward looking, as we're saying. I mean, here's Amazon in a relatively unusual position for Amazon, trying to incorporate sort of backward, you know, past devices into a new modern approach. That's not usually the route that Amazon finds itself in. The other piece, Colin, here, and I'm going to run the risk of sounding a little bit old school on this one, but I just find myself wondering a little bit whether this is pushing the boundaries of what people want to do with voice. Remember, the Fire TV Cube does not have it comes with a remote, but it doesn't have volume control on the remote, which means even as Amazon is trying to sort of position itself at the center of your entertainment experience in the living room, if you want to use the Fire TV Cube to just do a simple thing like raise the volume, you're going to have to use your voice to do that, or reach for the set-top box or TV's remote control to adjust the volume. I'm just not sure that people want to only be able to use their voice to do something like adjust the volume. Does that sound right to you? What do you think?
Yeah, it does. In fact, late last year, I ran a panel on voice control, and I asked my panelists if they thought that voice could ever become the primary or only interface to television, and it was pretty much universal. Everybody said no, and I think I agree with that. And actually, I was actually watching the videos that Amazon has created to accompany the release of this Fire TV Cube. They all, to me, seemed a little forced. I certainly don't. I mean, I can use my voice to control. I just tend not to. I just tend to prefer to use the remote. I don't know why. Maybe we're just old, as you say. But one of the things that this does emphasize for me, Will, and this is probably the final thing I have to say because we're running out of time here, but it really reinforces the power that this places in the hands of the CE providers. And they are really, we've talked about possible aggregation points. The streaming media players and the smart TVs, these are aggregators today that are really delivering. They've got, they're basically pulling all of the major apps into a single interface, providing integration with cross app search, voice control, and it really puts them in the power position because they can push services that they may prefer. So, for example, if you're looking to rent a movie, guess where you end up if you're on a Fire TV device? Well, you end up in Amazon's store. If you're looking to just kick back and relax and you're on a Roku, well, there's a lot of free content available on the Roku channel that's ad-supported. Maybe that's where you end up. So there's tremendous power, I think, for CE providers becoming this aggregation point for all of these services, don't you think?
Yeah, and I think, and final word here, that balance shifts, as you just described, which I agree with, I think the group that loses out are the existing pay TV operators that have always provided that set-top box and bolted their experience onto it. I think the CE company's gain is their loss.
You bet, Will. And that's disaggregation. That's exactly what we're used to seeing when the internet comes to bear on pretty much any market, right?
Absolutely. Well, let's leave it at that, Colin. We will see each other next Tuesday at our Video News Online Video Ad Summit. Registration still available for folks that want to get in. It's going to be a great day. I will see you there, and we thank all of our listeners for listening in on this week's edition of the Video News Endscreen Media Podcast. See you all again next week.